Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, they say that life isn't all just fun and games, but sometimes it can be about fun and games. And so we're going to talk this week about some games that were developed for iOS devices that are specifically made for the visually impaired.
We'll speak with the developer of the Blindfold Games series, Marty Schultz, about the games and why they're so popular with members of the blind community. And you'll even get to hear a demonstration of blind bowling. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Marty Schultz.
I've been fortunate enough to enjoy my life and now be able to put a lot of my time into doing things, you know, doing well by doing good, and hopefully other people can do that too.
And hence all your games that you're making now for the blind.
It's fun. And the emails I get from people make it all worthwhile. I usually get at least one email a day giving me a story that says that the games have really improved their life. That's rewarding.
Well, that's really great when you can be doing something that you enjoy a bunch, and then it turns out to be worthwhile for other people also. That can be very rewarding.
What Marty's doing is really wonderful. He is spending gobs and gobs and gobs of his own time to create these games that other people are enjoying. And, you know, you heard him talk about how rewarding it is for him to be giving back to the community. And we heard something similar last week from Mark Dillon talking about Unseen Art. And a couple of weeks before that from me and Pete talking about how much we enjoy putting this show together and how gratifying that is. And, you know, if you've got the time and you can do something good for the rest of the world, it's really a wonderful feeling.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
eSight, maker of digital eyewear designed to help improve vision for people with low vision and legal blindness. The technology can be used to read, see faces, and explore the world. More information is available at eSighteyewear.com. Let's start by meeting Marty and learning how Blindfold Games got started.
My name's Marty Schultz, and I build a bunch of audio games in the series Blindfold Games, and I'd like to tell you a little about what I've been up to.
Well, that'd be great. So we'll talk a little bit about Blindfold Games and some of the specific games you've developed later, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started in this, and what your background is?
Yeah, it's a great story, actually, how I got started in this. My daughter was probably about 10 years old at the time, and I saw her making a birthday list. And she was doing it on paper like most kids do, and every, you know, day she would have a new birthday list. And I said, you know, there should be an app for that. Now, I've been in software for about almost my whole career, started a bunch of companies, about 6 or 7 different software companies. And I learned how to make apps about 5 or 8 years ago. I said, there should be an app for that. So I had two options on how to do this. I thought I could build the app and then have it tested with a bunch of her friends as a focus group. Or what I did instead was I went to her school and I talked to the head of school and I said, I'd like to run a little app club where I'm going to teach these kids how to design the app. We'll work together to design a wish list app that kids could then create their list and then send the list off to their parents. And the kids will learn about the development of the app. And the head of school said, sure. We met 3 times a week for about 6 weeks. And by the time we were done, the app was done and we put it in the app store. And the head of school comes back to me and says, that was great. Can you run another club again? And by the way, can you please teach a programming class to our middle school students? Now, it's semi-retired at the time. So I said, sure. After I drop off my daughter, I'll teach the kids and we'll run another app club in the afternoon. So we started up the new app club and the kids were coming up for ideas. They said they want to do a game, and I said, fine, just make it a unique game. So all the games they came up with looked like every other game in the App Store. So I said, let's come up with something really different. And I, by the way, I don't want to have to hire a graphic artist. So they didn't come up with anything. I said, let's make a driving game for blind people, and they'll drive with their ears instead of their eyes. If they get too far to the left or too far to the right, they'll hear the sound of the fence will be music, and the music in their left ear or the right ear would get louder. So we spent about 6 months on that, with being a multi-level game where the screen was completely blank and you go through level after level, dodging different animals. There would be a cow in the middle of the road that you'd have to drive around, or you'd try to get popcorn to feed the troll. But we did, I think, about 35 different levels in the game. And then I decided I should probably have some blind people test this out. I didn't know any at the time. I got a contact with someone at the Miami Lighthouse for the Blind, and they organized a Saturday afternoon where I came in with about 20 iPads, and it was a bunch of teen gamers who agreed to look at the game. So we had staged all the iPads, we sent them all out, and then the kids started playing this game, and they played for about an hour and a half, and they absolutely loved it, and they had a lot of great suggestions for it. Like one of the kids, I think he was low vision, he could detect shading. He said, "Is the screen normally dark?" And I said, "Yeah, because it's an audio game." He said, "Well, you better put something on the screen because sighted people think their iPad is broken." Yeah, so we did that. And they came up with a whole bunch of other good ideas how to make the game more exciting. Then we tested it at Lighthouse for the Blind in Broward County. And there was one girl there. She was about 16 years old. And she said, "I can't wait to play my sighted friends because I am going to so beat their butt." I then submitted the game to the App Store. Apple Viz found out about us, and a day after they announced it, we had about 1,000 downloads and people just absolutely loving this game.
So that explains your first game, and that was only 3 years ago. And in the meantime, you've developed lots and lots of other games. What happened next?
I got an email from somebody over at the Carleton School up in Boston, where I go back and forth a lot. And he asked if he could visit me, if I could visit him the next time I'm up there. And when I finally got up there, he said, "Look, I can't meet you at the school, but can you come by my house? I have a couple people coming to stay with me, and we're going to spend all night playing this game." So I got there the next day, and Judy Dixon, Kim Charlson, Brian, and Doug Wakefield were sitting around in the living room. They had been playing this game, I think, for the last 6 or 7 hours, and they were just complimenting me like crazy on the game and coming up with thousands of more ideas for games on what they wanted to see. And at that meeting, I committed to building a blindfold cryptogram for Doug and a blindfold Sudoku for Judy. And they started collaborating with me. And then I think like a month or two later, I met a woman over at the Perkins School, and she had just gotten back from Las Vegas, and she really liked playing blackjack. So she and I collaborated on doing a blindfold blackjack, and then just one game led to another. And, you know, here we are like a couple of years later, and all the games I've built has been based on the suggestions from people who've liked the other games.
So this all just started to snowball, and basically your introduction into blindfold games or games without any screen display was because you didn't want to hire a graphic artist. Is that right?
Exactly.
We've actually done several shows about games, including one last summer with Judy Dixon, who he just mentioned, shortly after she had published a book about accessible games for iOS devices. And if you're interested, that's episode number 1530.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the audio games available through Blindfold Games.
So let's talk a little bit about your Blindfold Games. They're all available on the Apple App Store, but there's a ton of apps available there. How are you able to get some publicity for your apps, and how do people find them?
I've done our apps before, and the biggest problem when you do an app in the App Store is that nobody will know about your app because you're competing with a million other apps out there. And unless it's really targeted a specific problem, it's going to get lost. What I found was that by doing a really good job in building these games and listening to what the blindness community is telling me, each game gets better than the next game. I think when I did bowling, we worked on that with a bunch of people who were in blind bowling leagues. When I did all the card games, people who really like, whether it was spades or hearts or most recently rummy, these people are just such aficionados for a specific type of game that the game goes back and forth in testing for several months until it's good enough where they say, "Yes, I'm addicted to the game." I heard that with bowling. I've heard that with skee ball. I've heard that with air hockey. So every one of these games gets better and better, and that's because I get all these great suggestions from the testers.
And nowadays, you have over 20 games that you've developed that one can play without any vision. Is that right?
All of them are audio games. There is something on the screen so that if they're playing with a sighted friend as like a two-player game, the sighted person can at least see what's going on, because sighted people cannot play an audio game and remember what's going on. But yeah, they're all designed to be audio games. I've been going back now and adding some accommodation for low vision users where there's something on the screen that would help them, but all of them are designed really as audio-only games.
Anybody who's been listening to this show for any length of time knows Pete's blind and I'm fully sighted. So we come at these things from a totally different perspective, but it is amazing how people who can see, even if they don't see well, depend on actually being able to see what's going on.
I've noticed the same thing, and that's why I've had to go back and revisit some of the games so that there is stuff on the screen to look at and help them do better in the game. And I learned a lot about what things are important when I'm working on a low vision game. The other thing I've learned is there's a lot of people who prefer using their Braille reader as opposed to doing listening to voiceover, something like that. So I'm now starting to go back through the games and adding that type of accommodation.
So in the course of this discussion, you've rattled off the names of a whole bunch of games kind of just as they came up in the conversation. Could you kind of list the various types of games? And so you've got card games and you've got ball games and what specific games you have within each category?
Sure. Let me just kind of bring it up on my computer as I go through these. Okay. So I kind of divide the games into card games, casino games, logic games, and movement games. And I try to come out with a new one of each of those categories in a sequence, because there are a lot of people who, you know, they only have hearing in one ear, so they can't handle a lot of the movement games that require stereo information to be able to do well in the movement game. But in the card games, I think I did Crazy Eights first, then I did Uno, then I did War. Actually, before all of those, I did Solitaire, and within Solitaire, there are probably about 20 different varieties of Solitaire. Then I did Hearts, I did a game of Dominoes and about 5 different varieties of Dominoes, and a game of Gin Rummy. In the casino games, we started with Blackjack, and then I did Video Poker, then I did Roulette, then I added Craps, and now I'm going back and adding more styles of poker. In the logic games, we started off with a cryptogram, then we added Sudoku in both a 4x4 and a 9x9 flavor. Then we did the game called 2048, or also called Threes. And then finally is a game which is kind of a variant of Candy Crush. On the movement games, the whole thing started off with Blindfold Racer. Then I did a game. I was trying to do a game that would be similar to Angry Birds, and I just couldn't come up with a good audio version of that. So I did a modern take on the old video game called Frogger, and I came out with a game called Hopper. Then I did the video game Pong. I then converted that video game Pong into the video game Breakout. Then I was looking at, I wanted to do something like bowling or skee bowl or something like that. And I ended up having to find a physics engine. A physics engine in the software world is something that emulates real world events like gravity or one object bumping into another object. Found a couple of physics engines, got familiar with one of those. So that enabled me to do bowling. And then I did another game called Skee Ball, which is similar to the game that are a lot of the arcades. And then I did air hockey. And most recently, now I'm working on a juggling game. In the kind of the background, I'm looking at doing the game called Millborn or 1,000 Miles. And then I'll probably do a shuffleboard game next.
So this is great. You've got everything from classic games like Dominoes that's probably been around for a few hundred years to Candy Crush that's only been around for a few years. So people can play with friends and relatives who are either up with the latest or still interested in the classics.
I've tried, and the way I decide what game to make next is I basically look through all the emails I get, and whatever's at the top of the list with the most amount of people saying, I really want this, is what I do. I've been getting a lot of requests to do Monopoly and Scrabble, but I don't want to run into copyright issues there. So, you know, that's kind of still outstanding. I have to look at how to handle that.
One thing that amazes me is, so Nancy and I are both retired physicists and did a fair amount of programming in our careers, but, you know, we kind of appreciate the time it takes to not only code something, but make it robust enough to be able to distribute it to many people around the world. How do you come out with the throughput to create all these games in the period of time which you have? That's an amazing output for one person.
Well, you know, my whole career has been in programming, but you know, I was able to retire early because I started a couple of companies that did fairly well. So I'm a fairly competent engineer, kind of a guerrilla engineer. I kind of just get it done. I have phenomenal testers working with me on that, probably 50 or 60 of which for any given game, 15 or so will be really active with the game and come up with some great ideas. And the nice thing is since all the games kind of share the same underlying infrastructure, the only difference tends to be what specific features of this game differs from the next game. Now, when you're building a game, usually the game rule set is fairly straightforward. Now, a lot of the games, now I'm using a physics engine, it's easier and easier. I've actually gone through two different physics engines. I've gone through three different audio engines. So I know what my needs are. And once I find the engine, get familiar with it, and I get over that learning curve, it's very easy to work with. The hardest thing is if you're doing a game and you're having people play against a computer, finding a sensible algorithm where the computer will actually present a challenging game player with you. A lot of times you can find sample source code for the computer player out on open source sites.
Right, yeah, and I guess once you get the structure correct, as you say, it can support a number of games of similar types.
Well, if you think about it, if you take the simple game Pong, Pong is basically identical to Breakout, except Breakout has bricks. Pong is identical to air hockey, except you're playing on a flat table as opposed to a screen. Pong is kind of similar to shuffleboard a little. It's definitely similar to juggling. A lot of these games are really similar. What's changing in the games is the audio environment and maybe the rule set of the games.
Right, and then it's a matter of coding in the rule set.
Right.
So I understand you've got dozens of people testing each new game. Do you have other people helping you write the code, or is it all you?
It's all me.
Wow. Good thing you don't have a day job.
Yeah, I do a lot of business consulting and marketing consulting for some of the companies I started back in Boston. But it's kind of like a hobby, so I put a lot of time into the hobby. You know, maybe when I hit 100 games, I'll take a break.
So you talked about some of these third-party packages like the physics models and some of the audio models, which must take a lot of work to develop, but you can sort of grab and leverage that work for your own. Are these sort of open source things that are available on the web, or you buy these packages from others? How does that all work?
For the audio packages, I started with one audio package, which was open source. For a while, I was using an audio package for a couple of the games from the people who created Papa Sangre. And then I ended up kind of making my own audio package using some low-level tools that Apple makes available on iOS. For the physics package, I started off with an open source physics package, and then I switched over to the physics package that Apple is now making part of iOS 9. There's a lot of web services available that do a lot of cool things in the game, such as storing information like your scores or anything like that, where instead of actually having to launch your own website to store this information, you simply pay per transaction, and you know, the first 100,000 transactions every month are free. So as web services become more and more common, they provide the building blocks to make these apps very quickly.
And what is the cost of playing these games then?
All the games let people play a bunch of times for free. A lot of them are ad-supported where they don't want to put down any money. They're willing to listen to videos. They can get another couple of coins a day and play those games. But hopefully, you know, people will support us by upgrading, you know, either for a dollar or the full price of the game. But they always get something.
And what's typically the full price of the game?
It depends. If it's the type of game that I know is going to keep somebody busy for months, unlimited coins might be as high as $15, of which Apple keeps about a third of it. If it's just a simple card game, it might be like $4.
So we're going to demonstrate the blindfold bowling game, and it really has some great audio associated with it. Can you give us a brief description of the game before we do that?
Sure. Every one of the games I learned there are two things that are very important in the game. First is a very good audio environment, and secondly, having a lot of physicality. If you do both those things and the game works and is a quality product, the game will probably be successful. With bowling, it uses the standard rules for bowling, and it can be played in one of three ways. You can simply play by yourself, you can play by passing your iPhone back and forth between two people, or you can play against a set of computer players who vary in skill. You start off, I think, by inserting a coin to play. It gives you the ball. You then have three different ways of rolling the ball, going from simple to complex. The most simplest way is you flick your finger up the screen, and then the ball will go traveling down the bowling alley and hit, you know, some number of pins at the end of the alley. Then you have a one-finger aim and flick and a two-finger aim and flick based on getting you more and more accuracy in solving things like a 7-10 split or trying to do is get a strike or a spare. And then you play, you know, for the 10 frames, and then you get as good a score as you got. And I've gotten some amazing emails from people saying, you know, that for one reason or another, they could no longer bowl, and this just brings back their memories of what bowling was like, and they play the game for, you know, for hours a day.
Well, here comes Pete's demonstration of playing the game. As we said earlier, we have a lot of fun putting together this show. This is just one more example of why that's true. And listen to all of the awesome sound effects. It sounds just like your local bowling alley.
Okay, let's go blindfold bowling and check it out.
Blindfold bowling.
Welcome to blindfold bowling.
10 pin, you and computer, one finger.
Using one coin to play, you have 5 coins left. Starting game, 10 pin, you and computer, one finger aim and throw.
You are playing against Mariel. Mariel has medium ball speed and her ball accuracy is good. Mariel scores an average of 164 points per game.
It's your turn. Move your finger left and right to position yourself on the bowling alley. Then stop moving for a second, and then aim your flick at the pins you want to hit.
Okay, I'm going to throw the ball. Here we go.
You knocked over 8 pins, leaving 2 pins standing. 7. 10. Throw your second ball.
Here we go for another shot.
Center. 1.
You missed all the pins on this throw, leaving 2 pins standing. 7. 10. You scored 8 points.
Mariel throws the ball. Mariel knocked over 6 pins, leaving 4 pins standing. 1, 6, 7, 10. Mariel throws the ball. Mariel made a spare.
It's your turn. Frame 2. Throw your first ball.
And there you go. That's how the game goes. That's been fun.
Now for this week's final item, how you can contact Marty Schultz and how you can get more information about the games and get the games so you can play them.
So if people want to find out more about these games and try them out, where do they get them?
They can look at kid-friendly software on the App Store, or what's easier is just come to my blog, which is blindfoldgames.org.
You keep up a very interesting blog, and you sort of keep track of all your progress and new games, so that's a great place to go.
Yeah, and if anyone has any interest in how a game is made or what the technical trade-offs in the game was or just any interesting things, there was one blog that I remember that was really interesting, got a lot of laughs out of people, is I thought a really good way to get games done would be to find the source code for existing games written by other people and simply convert them from a visual game into an audio game. And I found a guy in China who had some game, and he said, you know, for like $200, he'll give me the source code and get it all ready for me to convert into an audio game. This was about a year ago when the Ebola crisis was at full swing. So I went through another site where you put down a deposit, and then I released like $25 of the deposit to him, and then he disappears, and I contact him like a week later. He says, don't worry, I'll get to you in a week. This goes on for 3 or 4 weeks in a row, and I'm kind of losing patience here. So I finally contact him, and he says, look, I'm in quarantine. I have Ebola. When they let me out of quarantine, I'll finish the game for you. And this guy claims to be in Beijing. And I'm thinking, you know, how naive does he think I am if he's going to simply come up with an excuse? Can he come up with something better than that?
You know, I saw that blog post. It was very humorous.
So you run into things like that from time to time.
But yeah. Eventually, I guess through some third party, you got your money back because they withhold the payment until the developer comes through with what he promised.
Exactly.
But it's not easy working with other people sometimes.
Yeah. And it's really hard. And I thought I would actually have access to a lot of good games possibly through by looking at what other people have written and then simply convert them to audio games. But so many games are only video only, and you really have to analyze the purpose of the game to be able to convert it. You can't simply just throw words in where there would be actions. You really have to take a step back and say, what's going to make this game fun? Mm-hmm. What's going to keep somebody involved with this game for hours? It's a rule with apps, which is if you're not wowing somebody in the first 15 to 45 seconds, you've lost them.
I see that you're also very amenable to suggestions about how the game should work, what new games you should work on and all. If people want to contact you, is there an email they should write to, or how do people provide that feedback?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, every game has a in the settings screen has a link both to the blog and to email. But if they want to email me, it's at marty@kidfriendlysoftware.com.
And then you're also very active on the Apple Viz site, which is applevis.com. And that's a great place for people who are into iOS devices.
That's right. And Apple Viz, each game has its own forum, as well as now there's a Blindfold Games forum, so people put suggestions there. And I usually respond to those suggestions the same day.
For people who prefer to interact via social media, do you have a social media presence?
I tweet off of Blindfold Games, at Blindfold Games. There is a Facebook page, but I've noticed Facebook is much less popular than Twitter in the blindness community, so I don't really pay much attention to Facebook.
And of course, if you're looking for any of that contact information or some of the shows that we discussed on games in the show, go to our show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net, and all of that information will be contained in the show notes for this episode. Also, if you're interested in trying any of Marty's games, just go to Apple's App Store and look for some of those games.
That's it for show number 1603. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about research about the blind shopping experience. We'll speak with Alex Cohen, a graduate student in the business school at Drexel University, who is studying how people with various disabilities interact with the online marketplace and hoping to be able to use the results of his research to convince vendors that it's to their benefit as well as their customers to have their sites easier to use for everybody. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.